Those positions were targeted on our civilian population, not so much the military in the installation contracting. It was at the headquarters level supporting each of the major commands. For example, in one major command, the positions that were hit virtually eliminated all of the civilians at the MAGCOM headquarters. That's where our 30 and 40 years of contracting experience get lost. It left a remnant of military who still had deployment obligations, so that workload left on those few remaining military was too much for any one organization to handle, losing all of that expertise. Nothing was going to change. We weren't going to get more people. So the contracting community was challenged, along with some of the other functionals who were going through the same type of adjustments. How do we survive? How do we help our major commands and contracting communities survive? And it was born out of that whole idea of we can't do it on our own, we've got to do it as a team. How do we do that team? And how do we pull those teams together from major commands that are in Texas, Hawaii, Europe, Langley, Virginia? How do we make them one team? So we started talking to each other and figured out, you know what, this is how we're going to have to build that cohesive team and figure out how better to manage. Right now, we've got the organization stood up. The policies and procedures are pretty well defined in terms of authority. But now, for the next year, where we move from initial operating capability to full operating capability, we start fleshing out the details. It's the people management, it's the policies and processes, it's the reviews, it's the technical procedures that we'll put in place for reviewing, it's the technology we're going to need to put in place or borrow from existing capability to do virtual reviews. But the whole idea is to maximize our resources, to realize we're not going to get any more. It's to, over time, understand where strengths are and capitalize on strengths and share those strengths.
In many ways, the idea is if someone says, hey, we need someone to do a cost estimate, and I'm just using a hypothetical here, and you say, well, we really don't have anyone who's available, but let me look on this virtual environment and see who's available. And if someone's in Hawaii who can do it, that cost estimate can be done when it can be done. It doesn't have to be done, you know, during 9 to 5 on the East Coast time. Is that the concept?
Exactly. And I'll give you a classic example. One of the things we do are for contractor reviews or solicitations that are over $10 million at some of our lower levels, that review threshold is higher. So it would come up to the major command for review, but that technical expertise isn't residing there. So we'll hang it on a site and one of our proposal review experts will pull it down, do a review, push it back on the site, and the team's ready to go. In my mind, and as we get better at this, that actually facilitates and improves our acquisition timelines because you're not queued up based in one and the limitations of one major command. But now you can post something, and you can be in Hawaii posting something, and someone in Europe picks it up, works it overnight, and it could be waiting for you, ready to go to your next step the next morning. That's nirvana. That's the vision. So at some point, we expect to be there, but that's what this next year is all about.
One of the areas you talked about was that they would take over the oversight of the strategic sourcing area for the Air Force, an area that you guys have spent a lot of time on, a lot of focus on. From their perspective, what are they going to focus on? Are there certain areas within strategic sourcing they're going to look at, or is it more just analysis of spend and then where the opportunities lie?
The Enterprise Sourcing Group, which is the nucleus for AFICA, has been doing strategic sourcing for quite some time. They are actually organized into strategic sourcing sales or commodity teams. One is the medical community for services associated with the medical. We have one associated with civil engineering. We have a commodity council that supports security forces. And the logistics community has expressed an interest in doing something similar. So the concept of strategic sourcing is alive and well. And the theory is, let's figure out where our spend is and is there a better, smarter way of doing it. But in the end, it doesn't necessarily mean a centralized contract vehicle. What strategic sourcing means is to understand where you're spending your money, understanding what the market looks like, understanding what our requirements are, and then making a deliberate decision. Does it make sense to allow each installation to continue to buy that commodity or service, or should we create a central vehicle to facilitate that, get some savings, or be more efficient in how we're buying? So we will continue down that path. And as I mentioned, it's important that we stay and have some of our own strategic vehicles as well as do our own contracting, because in the end, I still have to have a prepared and trained workforce that can do the full gamut of contracting.
What's going to happen short term, meaning is it a governance issue now? Is it kind of setting up the rules and procedures and then things will really start going? Or are you already using the virtual environment to share resources in the way you've been describing?
It just stood up the 1st of October, so we have an officially recognized organization. All the people that belong to the organization are now chopped over to the organization. They're owned on our manning document. What still has to come is the funding associated with those people needs to get built into the budget, and it needs to properly be chopped, and then it becomes a full organization. So we're kind of operating on the good graces of our owning major commands at this point, our supported major commands for the people part. But other than that, now we start fleshing out all those policies, all those procedures. We already have some well-defined. Who's going to manage our government purchase cards? Who's going to help us with deployment opportunities? Who's going to help us with our contractor performance assessment reports? Where are those strengths? Who helps us with our information technology, making sure our contract writing systems are working? Those are being shared around the Air Force already.
Initially, when you started setting up, what was the reaction? Because people, you know, it's moving the cheese a little bit. People
Absolutely.
Don't want to give up. Well, no, I can do that. I have time. And then, well, why is this delayed for 3 months or 6 months, whatever the time is? Was there some pushback, or did people go, yeah, please, I need help?
Both. Everybody still loves their affiliation with their major command. That's how it always has been. If you're an air combat guy, you're an air combat command guy. If you're air education and training, you are an air education and training guy. And you want to be affiliated with that organization, but you can't do it at all. So, of course, there's anxiety. Changing patches is what we call it, moving from one organization to the next. Not only for our contracting professionals, but for the major commands who are losing those contracting professionals to another organization. So, of course, there's always anxiety. But when you sit and explain the benefits of being able to pull from expertise around the entire Air Force, people calm down a little bit and realize that, wow, there's really some benefit to this. In fact, one of our senior contracting officials out at one of the major commands was recently briefing her leadership as FICA stood up, and he said, come tell me about this again. She went up and briefed her vice commander, and at the end, he looked at her and he goes, well, how come we didn't do this before? So there's goodness, and people, when they take the time to understand the benefits of pulling together virtual organizations and capitalizing on strengths around the Air Force, it's good.
And then more broadly speaking, obviously, one of the reasons why this new contracting command is being put in place is to deal with the attrition of people leaving. And when you bring new people in, the training issue, you have to get them up to speed. Talk a little more broadly about what you guys are doing around training of acquisition workforce, because I know that's a huge, huge challenge for every agency, every part of government. Is there something that this either A, contracting command is going to help with, or B, are you looking at something more broader?
What we'll have is one organization paying attention to everybody. Now, I do that pretty much in our Air Force level office, so we're keeping an eye on what's going on across the Air Force, and what we've learned is that the deployments have caused many of our acquisition professionals to be behind in their certifications, and DAU's throughput just isn't great enough to accommodate us. So we've done some analysis, and we have gone out with DAU sanction to find certified contractors who can give us the same courses that are certified by DAU, and we're putting those courses out there in population concentrations. This organization helps us identify those population concentrations and help put and kind of rebuild our training capacity.
And is cost to training something that you can deal with? Because obviously with sequestration, with budget tightening, people always say training is the first thing that gets cut.
The Defense Acquisition Workforce Funds have come to our aid. So we have partnered with DPAT, OSD, and they are sharing those funds with us to facilitate this training. So we're very transparent with them. We say, listen, this is what we'd like to do. We need to get our workforce back up to speed. And they say, okay. You can use those funds for that purpose, and we've been taking advantage of those funds right now.